hosts Mike and Richard welcome you to the show. This won't be very pleasant, you should probably know.
This is development hell, so don't be surprised if you don't feel well.
That worked out great.
Okay, so if we look at the intro that we have, we start out, we are one of four podcasts created within the last year, which is no longer true. I think A, because obviously it's been years, and B, I think a lot of those podcasts don't exist anymore.
And then on the John Carter app, I say the last couple years and like updated a bit.
There might be less than four now because several of those don't exist, but there has to be at least six new ones.
There's one that's way more popular than us that just
like this is a dev hell that's about like web development.
Yes.
It's like about like C++.
No, there's a YouTube channel called Shit Show that is almost exclusively doing things we have just covered.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Oh, that's tight. Yeah. I'm going to write that down.
If we had made this a YouTube channel instead of a podcast, ooh, baby.
Also, Shit Show, great, but development hell. I mean, come on.
All right, awful.
You're getting diminishing returns.
Still taking a shot. They've never acknowledged us.
Yeah, but their moms acknowledge us every goddamn night. the pass fail and everything else works. So I think it's just that we are, I mean, do we just say welcome to development hell?
We're a media history podcast.
We're a what is it?
A media history podcast.
That's fair. Cause you know, yeah. Okay. So welcome to development hell, a media history podcast. We're going to have to change. I'm sure we're under comedy on the apps. So we need to change media history while we say a goofy
feel good romp through film history.
I mean, I always tell people we just talk about the story of how things that were hard to get made got made or didn't.
Sure.
If you've ever asked yourself, how did this get made?
Oh, is that what we do? How did this get made? That's good.
That's us.
But didn't this get made?
That has to exist, right?
Yeah, no, it does.
I would hope it does because it's too good. We fucked up if we missed that one. Well, after all that, I am still Spike Kittrell. That's Kyle Anderson.
Hello.
And Richard Humphrey. And what we up? Go to hell, so you don't have to. I think that's the keeper. Richard had that on the first draft of this intro, and we keep that one for sure.
Yeah. Like the Pope. He goes to hell, so you don't have to.
Just him and the Queen just beating each other up.
Every night, the Pope, when he falls asleep, he has to fight his way out of hell back to his body. Regain consciousness to wake up the next morning and save the rest of humanity.
And this is just some of the media history.
Everybody knows that about the Pope. This is common knowledge. Every day
we can delete
wages a demon blood war.
We can delete this, but it just clicked for me like Richard's background.
Yeah.
I'm just a big fan of the Riddler in Gotham City, and
I get online to
show him my support.
Yep. Well, Richard, this is our first episode we're recording. We're a little out of order. We're doing two ups, but you just moved to LA. This is our first time.
Yeah, this is
LA boy,
California
Richard Humphrey. Cali Richie, does it feel like a new? Do you feel new?
Hollywood
Is there
Humphrey.
A different person, California Richie?
I guess.
Dream of California.
I mean, like
Richie.
I don't wake up and it's like it. I mean, it was miserably hot when I moved here because it was in the middle of a heat wave, so it felt the same. But like the weather's evening out, so that feels good. But
the weather's been so nice this week.
We
say 9 months.
I just like
in advance.
9 months recording. Yeah. Yeah, and also it's like
snowing for most of the country when you say that.
Yeah, there's a tornado that's become sentient and like killed 500 people. We're like, great, good weather.
We
gotta make sure that doesn't time out poorly.
You guys probably know what I'm talking about.
A hurricane does a school shooting. We can't put out the episode. Wait, really quick. So when we're recording this, the Queen just died.
Yeah.
This does kind of have some media history relevance. Are you guys aware? I told Rich about this last night. Are you aware, Spike, of why they delayed the trailer for the new Legend of Zelda game?
No.
So it has to do with the Queen's death. And it's because the next Legend of Zelda game is supposed to be called Legend of Zelda Tears of a Kingdom.
Oh, no.
Now, I'd understand if it was like that bitch queen dead, like Legend of Zelda, that bitch queen dead or something.
That's maybe not enough.
I would get it. But Tears of a Kingdom? Anyway, I just thought that was that's the most insane reason to delay like the most anticipated video game of the year.
Yeah. Well, it's also a wild title. It's not the most, like, regardless of what that game is about, I'm surprised.
Tears of a Kingdom Hearts, yeah.
It sounds like a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is supposed to kind of be a bummer.
Well, I mean, like, Wind Waker was ultimately
like, a bummer game.
No, like, the Link games are all bummers. Like, Wind Waker is... Wind Waker is a game that's like takes place on a flooded version of everything you've already played, and you're just like sailing on a boat above everyone dead.
I mean, Ocarina of Time is a like a game about how he didn't get to have a childhood because he spent it like killing an evil deity.
Whoa.
Well, and Majora's Mask is about like if you don't collect all these masks within 24 hours, the moon is going to crash into the world and you're going to explode.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on them.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I guess there's always like such dark, like secret darkness to these like Nintendo games and stuff.
Oh, God.
Very like melancholy music. But that's not what we're talking about. We might get to video games later. But today we are discussing something. I think it's our first foray into this piece of media history, which is a theme park. And we are discussing...
Let's go.
Now, Jurassic Park.
Here's what...
So the Isle of Nublar.
See? Nobody cares that he died in a robbery.
So what we'll speak to here, first of all, is this is a story that might tangentially be known, but it's best to kind of put blinders on, go on the journey with us. This has no... primaries. This is the most I've had to do like sprawling research because there's so many different accounts and there are certain moments that almost were just local news. So certain accounts will end up being just like, I guess this is all we have information for this. So I would just don't read ahead. Don't Google out. I have tons of artwork and we'll post those on social when this drops. But we are, do either of you guys know or have heard about Science Fiction Land?
No,
so it sounds like
land.
Sounds like a place where you're like, oh, where'd my dog go? And they're like, oh, he's in Science Fiction Land.
He went to Science Fiction Land. It's like what they tell nerds when their dogs die. Like,
it
that's
sounds
the farm.
Like, it sounds like a part of a bigger, cheap theme park. Like, it sounds like one section of, like, Florida Land. Come down to Sci-Fi Land.
It sounds like a
Cowboy World.
Like when they were pitching Tomorrowland, the first draft was, all right, for Science Fiction Land, we'll think of what it actually is called.
Yeah.
But in fact, it was actually meant to be like a massive, like bigger than any of these things, like huge. Now, let's dig into... Now, I am also bearing the lead here because Science Fiction Land also does involve a movie, a science fiction film.
Okay.
And this film
is it called Science Fiction Movie?
It's Rob
it is
Space
not.
Night, and I'm going to shoot
this
myself
film
on webcam.
This film was birthed into existence by our hero, Barry Ira Geller. Now, I'm going to throw a picture of our hero, Barry Ira Geller.
Never good when a person has three names. Very rarely good.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
One of our most evil men in history.
One of the most evil men. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
It's crazy because Jonathan Taylor Thomas is like buried in Joseph Gordon-Levitt's backyard.
You think that's what it is? Like he's that's, like, yeah, there can only won. Be one of us here.
Only
one man, three names.
500 Days of Summer. He could have done it. He could have.
Oh, he could. He would have crushed it.
This is interesting. We've never covered a theme park before, and I do think that there's a couple other theme parks we could cover in the future. So if you're a listener and you want to hear more about that, definitely let us know, because there is a. Do you guys know, like, there's like a time when the Muppets were set to take over? So the Muppets were way bigger than like any Disney property in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And they were going to rebrand for like an entire season, rebrand Disneyland as Muppet Land. And the idea was that like the Muppets took over Disneyland and like all the rides were going to have like Muppets, you know, inside of Matterhorn and Muppets like taking over this and the
If they did that tomorrow, I would be happy. Like it's a cool idea. And then you could give me like a pill that would make me die in 8 hours, so I could just spend 8 hours in the happiest place.
60 million people decide to kill themselves after having like been like, yeah, this is the peak. This is the best the world's ever going to get. Yeah, Kermit took over the teacups. I'm out.
Orgasm Disney will ever give me.
They're selling snickerdoodles with a cyanide pill in them.
That's the new churro flavor.
It's rolled in cyanide. Friend of the show, Justin James, is now, he's become in the last like 6 months, a Disney influencer on TikTok.
Oh, that, congrats. The man Spike just posted in the chat using a hair dye that is can only be labeled as Sharpie.
Now, I'll say, I will interject here that we all adore Barry Ira Geller.
Barry is...
What, is he the guy from Big?
No, he has Big, like, friend of your grandpa's energy.
Yeah, who is writing his own sci-fi novel that's like 600 pages.
Cool. Yeah, okay. He wants to tell you about the Knights of Kolokolok.
So Barry Ira Geller took an active interest in science as early as ages of 13 and 14 when he won third and then first in the New York City Science Fair. And his interest in the arts came to the fore in his teen years when at the age of 15 he became a devotee of such countercultural poets as Allen Ginsberg and Thule Kupferberg. I'm definitely butchering that. And he even was published in C Magazine at 16, a poetry magazine.
Cool.
He studied screenwriting.
He's a science poet?
He's like a science spacey poet. Like, there's no short quote from this dude. Cool. It's all very, like, long and, like, definitely was said tired.
Yeah.
Or sleepy. And so he studied screenwriting, and in the mid-70s at Community College in UCLA, he had a clear goal of the film he wanted to make. Now, Star I am going Wars. To send the first quote that Richard will read of Barry Ira Geller.
Yeah, he decides he wants to make Star Holy Wars, shit. And it's just the same dude, but he's it's that song, Something in the Way from the Batman, and he's just like dyeing his hair jet black for this picture.
This does certainly, this guy falls into our saga of like Star Wars chasers, but it's more so in that sense of like, people who see like who saw The Dark Knight and were like, I've been saying this matters for so long and finally it does. It's not a cynical reverse engineer. It's sort of like he's like the proper follower of this stuff becoming popular suddenly. Now, I'll forget, Richard, this is going to come up a few times. I had these tabbed in on my Word document, so I sent them and they have these massive spaces, this quote. I hope it's readable.
Oh, it's for sure readable.
Okay, so this is Barry Ira Geller talking about his early ideas for what a film would be.
I was searching for something to define my perception of different cultures and different alien worlds. I was heavily into Buddhism and also the idea that Christ visited different planets and that there were multiple civilizations going on around the universe. I still am. So I made a decision to find such a property. About space Christ?
Yeah, about space Christ. He's into like space and Christ.
So like I'm really into Buddhism and the fact that Christ was on other planets is
yeah, exactly. Which I think is a rough draft of like Scientology. I think that sentence you just said.
I think I really dude would have really liked Warhammer.
Yeah.
Like it's about like religious space commandos. This dude would have just played Warhammer and been really satisfied.
So, this is like when he discovers
Jared Leto's dad or some shit, isn't it?
This is
Jared Leto's dad. I know it.
This guy builds Jared Leto in his workshop, and then Jared Leto gets wished to life.
There's a painting in Jared Leto's basement that looks like this man, and Jared Leto just never ages.
Yeah, he switched places.
Robbed life of him. It's this time in 1977, he falls in love with the novel written by Hugo Award winner Roger Zelazny. It's called Lord of Light. And he basically white guided it into like actual development, like sort of, I think he had some money. I can't figure out where that was from, but I think he just was able to be like, get it in front of people, get the idea, get himself into meetings.
Cool.
And had Lord of Light been made then or now, Richard would have made us watch it for an episode. Now I want to read to you. I looked up Lord of Light. Again, I'm imploring everybody to not look up Lord of Light throughout this episode because we're going to get to other things. But I'm going to read to you the best. This is the most succinct thing I can find about what fucking Lord of Light is about.
Okay.
Lord of Light is
available.
What's that?
Is the book just available? It's a book, right?
It might be, and it would be easier to read than this description. So, Lord of Light is set on a planet colonized by some of the remnants of vanished Urath, or Earth. You know how, like, a sci-fi, you need to create new planet, Earth name.
Yeah, totally.
The crew and colonists...
Barsoom it, you know?
You gotta hit it with a barsoom.
Never barsoom anything.
The crew and colonists from the spaceship Star of India found themselves on a strange planet surrounded by hostile indigenous races.
They're named after just an Indian restaurant.
Yes.
Star of India.
And they have to carve a place for themselves or perish. To increase their chances of survival, the crew has to use chemical treatments, biofeedback, and electronics to mutate their minds and create enhanced self-images or aspects that strengthened their bodies and intensified their wills and extended the power of their desires into attributes, which fell with a force like magic upon those against whom they were turned. The crew has also developed the technology to transfer a person's Atman, or soul, electronically to a new body. The reincarnation by mind transfer has created a race of potential immortals and allowed the former crew members to institute the Hindu caste system with themselves at the top.
This is some very, like, 60s, 50s sci-fi where the shit was so dense.
That's Scientology.
With like dumb metaphor. Like it's so dense of like, so the soul, or as we call it, the Atman.
They did that. Like, they did that because they got paid per word.
Like,
right. And you could create property out of every noun.
But it was also renamed it. It was also just like a thing of like trying to be really heady and like overly, you know what I mean? Like we don't really have this problem now, but like it's sort of like back in that time, like anyone could ostensibly write a spec script for like Star Trek and it could get made if you were just like some dude.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
Like, cause this was like the mid-70s, right?
This is late 70s.
Yeah, late 70s.
This is 77.
Yeah,
he has watched Star Wars.
This is when.
Yeah, exactly.
This is when people are literally going crazy because they think aliens are so real and like nobody will believe them and stuff. Like, this is when those cults and Heaven's Gate sort of like propagated, was because of like that sort of like thinking and that popular idea that like there has to be aliens out there. And that
this is also like clearly a book about like people in space, like, trading parts of their personality to each other and, like, fucking hard.
Yeah, well, sure. And that's like, and that's like,
mentioned the, it, but I'm pretty sure everyone in this book is fucking hard.
No, that's like what, like, that is what, like, Heaven's Gate was like promising you. That's like what all of that was like doing, was like, this was the Bible for that. But
they stole your money and sold it
to their daughter.
So the novel was written in 67, which is after, it's before Star Wars, but it's also after Scientology, if I recall correctly. So what it is it speaks to how, like, it just, whichever one of these catches, sometimes it can be this huge hit like Star Wars, but sometimes it can also be this huge religion. Like, there's so many of these, and it's completely arbitrary what, like, suddenly culturally matters on such a massive scale. That, like, we could all be talking annoyingly about words like Jedi and Sith and be like, it's like Atmans and how we all accept that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, Sith is not any more of a word than Atman, I suppose.
Like Tatooine and Barsoom are the same thing.
Right.
100%, exactly. And that's the sort of magic of Lucas, right? Of, like, Lucas probably read John Carter and parts of Lord of Light. Like, he was such a nerd and just knew he could. He's like the best guy at dumb, smart stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's also now, like, this kind of stuff loses me the same way that, like, deep fantasy loses you, where it's like, we get into, like, we're splitting the id and the ego of the crewmates to create new aspects of themselves. These aspects are known as geowalkers, and a geowalker needs 4 Atmans to reach enlightenment. That's,
what you're talking about is everything friend of the podcast Mitch Holloman loves.
Well, I'm on board with that. Even in sci-fi, like what Kyle just said, any sentence that's these X are known as Y, you know, these beasts are known as flighters.
Here is like, the simple thing that we could call it because you're aware of it via text, but we're going to call it the complicated thing.
We call them maze runners. You'll never guess why.
But it's weird how the brain can be receptive to certain things. And I don't know. Obviously, I just read a Wikipedia summary, but, like, something presented correctly, you're like, okay, the Maze Runner, terrific. I understand. And I understand the stakes of this big old maze. Now, although a novice, Geller was able to get an option for the worldwide film rights along with all other exploitive rights. He wrote a script, and continued to renew his option over these 2 years that we will be discussing. Now, along with the film, as I've promised, Geller had his sights on simultaneously working on another passion project, which was Science Fiction Land, a sprawling theme park proposed to be built in Aurora, Colorado, which would feature Lord of Light attractions among other otherworldly landscapes. Now, this is where I was like, I went into this thinking, I have an angle on this. I don't know if this is a great app, if it's going to hold water. Now, listen to this. To accomplish all of this, the producer brought in industry-leading futurist Buckminster Fuller, Italian architect Paolo Soleri, game pioneer Gary Gygax, concept artist Jack Kirby, and author Ray Bradbury.
Oh,
this
shit.
This dude was...
So you didn't have me in the first half, but that second half.
Yeah. Oh, no, I knew it. I stacked him right.
Dude, he created like a creative old man Avengers.
It's like 100%. That episode of
this is 1977. These guys are ready to fuck.
These guys are like 30. Yeah. Jack's still
Kirby's a little older,
but yeah, he's Kirby's the Elliot Gould of their
100%. Yeah, Curly is like, just out of curiosity, which theme parks were you looking to build?
He's in a bed, like, recovering the whole time, just like sketching Kirby crackles.
Those are Terry Benedict's Atmans. What do you two have against Terry Benedict? I mean,
shake the hand of an aspect.
Screw the aspect's hand. So I have another, this is speaking to this and this sort of brain trust that
I mean, a really cool group, a group that, like, I'm sure this is going to development hell its way out of, but, like, we see this so often where, like, you can't put together the right team, but without the proper leadership, you'll still get nothing at the end of the day.
Now, speaking on the think tank, Richard, here's another, this is another statement. I think this was in past tense writing of Barry Geller.
My promotion of the film in 1979 was to bring attention to our extraordinary mental powers, just as Star Wars brought recognition of life in the galaxy. The science fiction theme park was to expand the imagination of children by bringing together the greatest scientists and new technologies utilized completely for an entertainment basis. Knowing we were changing the future, the theme park slash film project became the greatest dream for all of us, perhaps even the culmination of a life's work for several of my collaborators, including myself.
So, like, he also knew to get people who weren't cynical. Like, they were all so into this.
That's Epcot, though, right?
Now, I was trying to, I didn't have time to dig into this.
No, Epcot was Disney's idea of what the future was going to look like.
And what? And that's different from the bullshit he just said. How?
Because their off world, Disney was on world.
I will also say Epcot was not. Epcot did not exist.
Yeah, Epcot didn't exist.
Same.
Epcot wouldn't exist for 5 years.
Same shit. He ripped off Epcot. We all know he's
future ripped off Epcot.
Exactly.
Which isn't even really Epcot anymore. It's the Guardians of the Galaxy ride.
I have another quote in here somewhere, but it speaks to, like, he genuinely was probably mistakenly approaching this with no cynicism. I think he really saw this as, like, we can create it. He looked at it as, like, he was Walt Disney. He wanted to be Walt Disney, but he unfortunately had, like, the innocence of a Disney fan. You know, he thought he could, he really saw, like, we will actually create the most magical place on Earth where, like, science is so exciting to children.
I mean,
you know, So the park was also meant to serve as the set for the film that they were developing.
I'm going to live world here too, so you guys know. I've got a little space I made above the candy shop. I'm going to live up there. No one's going to know but me.
My wife, Barbara.
She's the got a park was...
she got her own.
She got her own little place above the macaroni grill.
Well, speaking to Macaroni Grill, the park was funded first, or it was meant to be funded first before the film, because that generated financing for the films. They were sort of simultaneously opening. They were making Toy Story while making the Toy Story ride, if that makes sense.
It's sort of your classic, you know, like Robert Rodriguez, when he wanted to make El Mariachi, he just opened a theme park.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everybody is like, I can't believe he made that movie on just a theme park that 6,000 people a day went to.
Giving $1 each, and then that was his budget for mariachi.
Yeah, and he was like, well, I have a turtle, I have a theme park.
You make your list of resources. I had a turtle, had a gun, and I had a theme park.
Because they were like, we're going to film at the theme park. That's smart, you know, because they have a theme park.
Yeah.
You know, the movie should really, if they were really smart, the movie would have taken place at a half-built theme park.
Yeah. They would have been golden. Actually, they would have. To be totally honest with where this is going, they should have been set on a plot of land that said just purchased.
Okay, exactly. Now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like the movie Cop Car was just filmed by, they just let two kids steal a cop car.
Yeah. It was, they just set up 100 cameras around town and said, hey kids, there's keys in that car.
That's why Interstellar was so hard to film. They had to get the whole crew into a liminal space where your sort of string theory exists.
Yeah, it's sort of, well, that's Nolan's thing where he's like, I made a list of what I had. A fifth dimensional tesseract.
A suit.
A world that only has corn.
The David O. Russell putting Christopher Nolan in a fucking headlock is so insane. Do you know about this?
Yes, I went on a like drunk crusade against him on Instagram to all
I remember.
You know, 9 of my followers, but like it turned Richard around.
I'm not gonna say who it was, but my boss, you guys both know who he is, was there for that for the headlock.
Why? I mean, you don't have to answer that, but that seems surprising.
It was a movie. It was about having Nolan or having Bale. He wanted to use Bale, but Bale was shooting for American Hustle, but Bale was shooting for Batman.
And oh, for a
like,
good
come
movie?
Come on, it's Batman! And he put him in a headlock, and he was like, come on, it's Batman! And he's like, Christopher Nolan was like, okay, if you let me out of the headlock, I guess you could use Bale for an extra week.
Ugh. David O. Russell can this is
at like a huge industry like Oscar party.
Yeah. I guess we can all say it, guys.
This was done in tuxedos.
Yes,
we can, exactly. Well, we can say it. Enemy of the podcast, David O. Russell.
100%. Our first true enemy docs David O. Russell. Now, all the money to finance the film was and the theme park. Now, I know this is where it gets shitty, and a lot of this comes from his business partner, Jerry Schaefer. Now,
I know her.
A lot of the all the money to finance the film was by selling restaurant space, concessions, sponsorships. Separately, Geller personally raised somewhere between $500,000 in limited partnerships and private investors. Now, he raised $500,000. The park was supposed to cost about $500 million. So it's like, you know, when you're 28 days into a Kickstarter and it's just visibly, it's like you fucked up. That first day was huge. Now, they're raising $500 million in 1977 and 8 for this theme park. Separately, the movie will cost $50 million, but the movie can't be made until the theme park is built because the theme park is the set.
It occurred to me that I don't know how much a theme park costs to make.
Right. Yeah.
But $500 million in 1970, I think, is all the money in the United States.
It's all that they've made.
Yeah, it's all we've made up until that point. Like, that's such a huge amount of money, especially at that time, is like insane. I mean,
which we'll get
to. Theme park was supposed to be insanely ambitious then.
100%. You hear about some of the things, and I'll go through these things.
$40 million. That's what it cost.
$40 million. Like, how much was an average for a theme park?
I googled how much does a theme park cost to make, and yeah, I got, indoor theme parks require on average $10 million to $30 million to build. Generally, a water park, and the expected costs are $10 million to $40 million to build.
I think the concern was twofold. Where one, they were also building a sort of resort. They were building like adjacent hotels and things like that. But they were also like inventing things. Like it was this idea of like worlds, like what you see in like Iron Man 2, where it's like there's stuff that only exists here.
Yeah,
they're imagineering on not a performative level, but on a genuine place of like, oh, science fiction land. That's the only place where these six amazing technologies exist.
Cool.
Now here's the sort of main thing. He had meant for it to be sort of a place for top scientists to show their gadgets, similar to like World's Fair or things like that. Geller had envisioned and had worked with various engineers utilizing the technology of magnetic levitation, which at the time was being used for the bullet train in Japan. If you wanted to go anywhere in the park, you'd get in a car, hit a button, and it would float and take you there. However, that worked very simply. The entire park had metal tracks under the ground, and they'd have holographic vast outdoor projections on buildings. The whole park was going to be enclosed in a Buckminster Fuller dome, over a half a mile high and 3/4 mile wide, which would float based on differences of the weather inside and out.
This feels like that episode of The Simpsons where they get to live, like Homer gets a fancy job with that evil villain played by like a Charlton Heston.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in that weird future house that cleans itself and shit.
Yeah.
feels like the monorail episode. This is insane.
Yeah. I mean, no. He's just that. This guy is a Simpsons character, like created by Conan O'Brien.
This is a Magneto plot. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So Geller's. Yeah, go ahead.
No. I just can't believe the scale of this place. So it's like half a month. That's insane.
So Geller's second in command, Jerry Schaefer, promised a lot, especially to like the Denver, like the Colorado area. He was very much like, we're bringing money to Aurora.
Right.
And in 1979, he listed these as the plan. More than 2,000 hotel rooms, a 38-story Ferris wheel, 3 10-story statues depicting characters from Lord of Light with restaurants inside. Characters from Lord of Light. Yeah.
It's like the fucking Egyptian statue in Lost. That's insane.
An attraction where park goers could experience weightlessness inside of a cube held by a giant hand.
Finally, I can come.
Does that not sound like he kind of riffed that one? Because it has a couple of like where they experience weightlessness in a cube.
It has everything.
And the cube is held by a hand. Yeah, it's very Stefan.
It's very Stefan. Where he's like, the cube is held by a hand. And you're
in something we call the human suitcase.
Mulaney added the giant hand thing. I didn't know it was coming. It killed me.
Aspect.
All right. Well, now,
all of the food is a cube.
This is one of those places that would serve like whiskey to you in vapor form.
Yeah, it's the bar at the end of in like Parks and Rec where you have to like breathe your food.
You like an Oreo.
All right, so these genuinely get crazier. A 30-story structure that would contain a 1,000-lane bowling alley with robot workers.
Is it vertically?
I know. It's that's how wide it is as well.
But it's 1,000 lanes long.
But it's 300 feet high.
Maybe it's only 100. It's 300 lanes. No, it's 100 lanes per floor with 30 floors of 100 lanes apiece.
And you're still short, I think, 100 lanes.
Oh, my God. We'll make a base.
Streams where guests could fish for trout
in the you know like in the future 70s.
Yeah,
trouting. We've got to have some trout. People are going to be mad if they can't trout.
Boat rides that turn into submarines. Now this is really clicking. That this well, sounds that, so that's Stefan. A Disney. That's true. Epcot did take that one. Laser holograms that would be projected throughout the park, which we've done, and park employees on jetpacks. Now moving on.
Okay.
Hey! Don't move on. What?
Here's the thing. You can pay me minimum wage.
I get a jetpack though.
If you give me a jetpack, you can pay me minimum wage. Can you imagine? I want you to close your eyes and imagine, because I think one of the most miserable jobs in the world that I see people do, I always feel bad for them, because it's a job where you can't get tipped. It's a job where there's no respect. It's a job where you're just utterly, it never stops, is the guy who has to push back the grocery carts at the grocery store.
Oh,
it's a,
hey, I've done that job.
It's a bottom tier job it's necessary for our society to function, but it is an important job. It's like bottom tier.
It's a lot of work.
Well, it's a lot of work. You're out in the elements. Like maybe the only good thing is you can like listen to music while you do it. But like, even then you might get hit by a car. Like it's not, you know,
yeah. At any given moment, your life is more on the line than a cop.
Imagine if this kid was zooming around on a jetpack, like GTA San Andreas style, like just a few feet off the ground, but his little legs are dangling like he's on that one ride at Knott's Berry Farms, and he's just zooming around this parking lot grabbing carts. That's an awesome job now.
But here's my issue with it. Think of like a jetpack. Jetpacks now, if you put me in a jetpack in 2022 and you say whatever you say, this was made by a Tesla, whatever, it's a trusted thing made it. That thing might fuck up, and I'm almost sure it will. Mm-hmm. Think about a 1980s jetpack.
The problem.
Think about a teenager using it, and think about it having, the park has a roof. You've got employees banging into each other and the roof. Think about like Adventure Dome in Las Vegas and they're just people zipping around.
Gasoline powered jetpacks.
Let me tell you, Spikes.
The exhaust inside of this place.
It's killing all the trout.
The trout are all dying because they're in a
That's
hot,
why everything's like
dome.
Hundreds of feet in the air is to keep smog. From the jetpacks.
Just all this smog inside of a theme park.
Inside. But I will say, so that is that.
It was going to be promise. Dudes on pulleys. It was just going to be like some weird bungee. Like,
see, that's the thing is that if you made jetpacks, you would have to make it where the speed limit on them is like a bird scooter. You know what I mean? Like they can only go 10 feet.
Go fast enough to kill a woman over 60.
Exactly. You don't need those, but not any faster.
So I've sent another quote for.
That was a joke.
I've sent another quote.
From Kyle Anderson.
Going back to the collaboration, this is what he had to say about working with Jack Kirby, who we all know, like, you guys are sick Marvel fans. Jack Kirby was, like, the main man of the time, co-creator of, like, everything. And Richard, could you let us know what... What else? This is our longest quote. Don't sweat it.
I feel like Jack Kirby was like everyone's like good mushroom dealer, but
sure.
Let's look into this.
Then he hung out and told you about the Eternals for way too long.
Right. Like,
that was his big thing, right? His big like kind of blank check
that,
over there.
That was his aspects. That was his like deep 6,000 page lore dump that you would like tell anybody who would listen kind of.
That was his that was his Chronicles of Riddick. In what would hallmark many of our seminal discussions which preceded new drawings, we talked about space beings with vast interdimensional powers, like being able to be aware of many planets at the same time. Beings that inhabited other planets and many of the technologies possible. Other civilizations and alien cultures, all of whom we thought were totally real. Reality for both of us. Jack was vibrantly aware of and quite verbal about his fear that by sending out our human info, we were informing that the not-so-friendly where their next conquest would be. Who were the gods of Lords of Light? How'd they act? How was their sexual lives? Their amusements? See. What was it like to walk around their city called Heaven? I'd gifted Jack and Mike Royer, Jack's master inker, with huge books about the art of India. I wanted to take Jack out of the box, knowing his normal state was already extraterrestrial compared to most artists, and push him into new holographic visions, much the same way as 1962 Galactus art was heroically new at the time. I wanted the new, the original, the future.
So you can just like
the Marines.
Yeah. the future, the Marines. But to what like Richard's saying too is it just seems like these guys got high and talked about like existence and like drew these massive sprawling pieces of art that I'm now gonna add to
and it all just looks like AI art.
No, it looks like fucking Jack Kirby art.
There's an episode of Mad Men. There's like an arc where they bring in a guy who does like, he's like one person's doctor and he gives everybody like a shot in the butt. And I guess it's like they do like LSD without realizing it or something. And they're all just like Don Draper starts falling apart and he's like, no, you don't understand. Soup is everything. He's like trying to sell a soup company and he's like, no.
Shot in the butt. And you're
so if you check
blame.
Our chat, I've sent four images. One of them especially is the like proposed science fiction land, and many others are like again dual concept art for the kinds of statues that would be at the land
it's
at the park.
Kirby art too.
So Spike, tell me about this like weird like pretzel in the bottom right of science fiction land that's made of fire.
Yeah, it looks like a weird like it's leaking, like the park is leaking foam. I can't find.
Kind of looks like the park's anus prolapsed.
It really 100%.
Kind it of looks like a discharge of some sort.
It looks like a bloodshot eye got twisted and turned into
but this park looks ripping.
Yeah. I'd go. Like, I'd die, but I'd go. I'd go to Action Park. I'd die.
And if you see things like the third to last picture is like, those are the characters, those are the statues, those would be like their Mickey Mouse or their...
It would just be Galactus'
their Jaws.
And, stuff. And it yeah, would like 100%. All look like
you're saying Mickey Mouse, but these just look like Galactus is wearing like He-Man shit.
Which is the funny part of like, as much as I love Barry Ira Geller, like that he's like, I pushed him way outside of the Kirby level and Kirby just drew him Galactus, but big, like even, but like standing on a planet.
He drew. Yeah, that's Galactus with booty shorts. That's like
right. It's the summer. It's summer Galactus.
Look at these little like 5-inch inseams we got on Galactus. Little boy slut.
Galactus got a
but like. But this isn't just Kirby art. They were like, we're going to build this because we're raising all of the money that has been made on Earth.
Right.
Now, speaking to that,
a lot of movies here, honestly. I mean,
which I think, again, was the idea.
Yeah, Roger Corman's Fantastic Four.
In November of 1979, Geller and Schaefer announced a funding drive for the Science Fiction Land. And this big event was held with football player and actor Rosie Grier. And even Jack Kirby was there. Like, it was this big event. Like, we're doing it. Now, a month later, just days after celebrating the purchase of all of this land in Aurora, Colorado, and the water rights for the proposed park, Geller and Schaefer were arrested and charged with violating laws regulating securities in Colorado. Authorities became suspicious of the project after Schaefer kept going on like to the media and being like, we're going to make fucking 1,000 bowling alleys, you know, like. I think people.
Right. I think they were like, what do you mean 1,000 bowling lanes? And they were just like, this sounds like bullshit.
Well, right? It's one of those where it's like $500 million is too much for a theme park. It's obviously too much for a movie. And so you'll never raise this.
Now.
They have raised millions. Schaefer's raised millions. They've made all these purchases, and I think
because you'll never raise the $500 million, you'll never make it. So you'll never.
So what are you doing with this money you are raising?
Right.
Now that the answer to that question isn't obvious in any reporting, but I mean, it just seems to me that there was a bit of like some sort of vague, you know, parallel to like the producers of like raise money to never spend it, raise money to put it elsewhere, because investigators also looked into the actions of city and county officials, including the mayor surrounding the project, some of whom were charged in connection with the investigation. Did we just lose Richard?
I love a crooked mayor.
Oh, no, I'm still
here. Okay. I love a crooked. There's nothing funnier in my mind than a corrupt local mayor.
Dude.
Especially like a late 70s corrupt local mayor.
Yeah.
Real big tie.
I would do anything to serve under a corrupt, like in another life, I am the second in command to a horrible man who is the mayor of like Lincoln, Nebraska, and we just raise hell. smoke crack and raise hell.
So Schaefer was eventually convicted and given probation in 1980. So he did like 5 months.
Wow.
Others caught up in the scheme, including Geller, saw their charges completely dropped. This seems to be something like Schaefer was completely masterminding. Geller, again, just fucked up and got the wrong person involved. It's like the one person he got involved that wasn't just in it to make something awesome. And the Science Fiction Land scandal appeared to have dropped from the memories of many in the community. Some journalists in local Colorado press still depict Schaefer and Geller equally as con men, but by literally every other account, Geller was cleared of charges and denies he had any knowledge of what was happening.
Man, so Geller really thought he was just going to get to make his cool shitpost theme park, deep lore.
So you're telling me the guys who were making a theme park were con men?
Now, At this stage, the funding has left. Mm-hmm. Geller has spent 2 years working on this. The theme park was never going to happen and is dead. The Brain Trust is absolved. He is just sitting there with Kirby's art. The film is obviously totally dead. All he's sitting there is now with a screenplay and his concept art, right?
And it's just a screenplay for Lord of Light, right?
Which he has the rights to, yeah. So, on November 4th, 1979, the U.S. Embassy in Iran was stormed by Iranian college students and 52 diplomats were taken hostage. However, six American diplomats managed to evade capture, taking refuge at British and Canadian diplomat facilities.
They took refuge by hiding inside of a cube that was suspended by a giant hand.
Now, they'll never catch us in here.
Now, have either of you seen Argo?
Yeah, Argo, fuck yourself.
Wait, does this have to do with Argo?
This is the movie that Tony Mendez found, stole the script of, and used as the fake cover in what was later known as the Canadian Caper, as depicted in Argo.
Holy shit.
Huh.
Now, one of the geniuses I left off of the science fiction land Brain Trust was Hollywood makeup artist John Chambers, who had a long-standing relationship with the CIA, creating disguises for undercover operatives. He was played by John Goodman in Argo. Now,
you're like a oh god, what's the, why can't I think of the guy's the lead in Argo?
Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
It's like you're like one of the people I left off this Brain Trust, a 4-year-old Ben Affleck, charismatic leader of the group
of the great Affleck clan. Yeah. Whatever the feasibility of the Lord of Light and science fiction land proposals, all of the legal nightmares cleared the way for the CIA to use the promotional materials, specifically the Lord of Light screenplay and Jack Kirby's concept art. The idea that Lord of Light was undermined by a deliberate subterfuge on the part of the intelligence agency is supported by the documented involvement of John Chambers in both the concurrent uses of the materials by Geller and the CIA, and by the proximity of the timeframes. Basically, it's sort of like, who knows if all of this money shit in Colorado would have been obvious or would have been uncovered if Chambers wasn't like telling his buddies, like, look, if you have this dumb movie idea, I have something that might work and it's going to go under anyways.
Huh.
Geller says that Chambers simply provided his script and graphics to the CIA for their purposes without any permission. Kirby's original drawings were so impressive.
You tell me the CIA didn't option it?
Well, okay, we're literally getting to that.
He said CAA.
These guys at CAA, they like this stuff. They want to take it and save some lives.
CAA operatives.
Now, Kirby's original drawings were so impressive that they gave the operatives and escapees confidence that the plan was plausible. Everyone involved believed Kirby's art would convince the Iranians of the project's legitimacy, and further, it was drawn within stringent Islamic cultural rules of what may be depicted according to religious law. Now, I actually should back up that basically it's debated here that like whether Tony Mendez, a CIA operative, or John Chambers thought of this idea to rescue these people by coming in to Iran and removing these people, these Americans, pretending to be a Canadian film crew scouting a science fiction film. That was the Canadian Caper. And it was completely, it went way smoother than the movie depicts. I think it's actually like a good movie as a thriller, but a lot of the more like thrilling, tense aspects of the ending, which a few will go through, didn't quite happen. The plan worked perfectly, and a lot of it was thanks to Kirby's work.
It's crazy that like these Iranian like Iranian border guards are like looking at everybody's suitcase, and it's very like tense music. Then they pull out the concept art, and they're like, "What is very outside of his sort of normal Kirby?"
It's Galactus. I'm not going to do a voice.
He's wearing booty shorts. I mean, this is not like anything he's ever done.
Well, to speak to that, Kirby's work is actually not in the film.
They just look at the two Iranian guards look and they're like, is this prolapse? Huh?
What is this pretzel? The Kirby's work is ornate and linear without modeling. The human figure is not very present and minimized, especially the female figure. And most of the drawings are done from the vantage point of overhead because, like, that's how you do
theme park
concept art for a theme park. But, like, this is in a manner remarkably similar to ancient Islamic tapestries. In Mendez's account, Mendez being Ben Affleck's character in the film Argo, in Mendez's account, and as depicted in the film, his idea of using a fake movie production crew to extract the hiding diplomats didn't seem feasible until the agents hit on the Lord of Light promotional package. Kirby's work is impressively well done and suits the purposes of the CIA exactly. It was clear that the artwork added greatly to the credibility of the film proposal for Geller's purposes and for the CIA administrators who approved the rescue mission, the personnel charged with accomplishing it, and the diplomats who had to participate in their own rescue, whether or not the Iranians saw it. So quickly, I'll go through Argo. So Warner Brothers sent Barry. This is now this story. Barry had no idea what happened to his stuff. He basically knew that his work became unavailable to him. But this story was not declassified by the CIA until 2009. So he had no idea what happened to this stuff until 2009. Warner Brothers, when they made this movie in 2011. Sent Barry a contract for $0 to give up the Jack Kirby art, which he still technically owned license to, even though the CIA stole it for the operation in 1980. To actually depict it, he owned it. You know, he for it to be used in a commercial film, he owned it. They offered him like no money. When he basically said no, they said, it doesn't really work well anyways. The film depicts Jack Kirby as an artist hired to create storyboards after the CIA has the script. And those storyboards end up being generic, highlighting like the female heroes. And if you see the movie, like when the guards are looking through the storyboards, they're all like, oh, love this, big tits. This girl's so fucking hot. This girl's so cool. This guy's getting the girl. That's shit that would not have worked had Iranian guards seen it in 1980. The film also depicts a composite character of Geller, portrayed as a sleazy producer played by Richard Kind, being talked into selling the rights to the film. The film also depicts an event being put together to add glitzy legitimacy to the project. There's that famous line, I think it's in the trailer, where Alan Arkin's like, if I'm making a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit. Like, they do this big press thing. What that actually was the funding event that happened the month before and all of the negative press around it and all of the, it's like whether it's good press or bad press, it made it a legitimate cover because now this movie exists outside of anything the CIA would create. So it was really like once the shit went down with Schaefer and all the money laundering or whatever it was like perfectly placed for the CIA to grab. So yeah, I know Kyle, you've made a lot of great work about the CIA and it's just sort of all the nasty. This falls right into that.
I mean, I've said this before. I don't know if I've said this before in like media that I've put on the internet, but I don't know if any one entity has done so much bad in the world. Like just unchecked, chaotic,
yeah,
wildness that they can always somehow justify in their mind. And honestly, the Argo mission was like a good thing, net positive in the world, I suppose. Got these people home safe. They didn't kill anybody. They didn't destabilize governments doing it.
For every like
one of their greater hits, yeah.
Yeah.
For every like 10 good things the CIA is like kind of done, there's like 900 bad things.
But also, watch that. Check out that media. I mean, you want to talk about the media industrial entertainment network. It's like that shit got declassified and was a major motion picture with huge, with like John Goodman, like major stars in 2 years.
Like 2 years later. Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years later. Had this great, like, the CIA definitely was like, oh, this is one of the coolest things we've done. Let's get this in front of people so that it's like a cool story that we're known for. And they don't notice they haven't. It, I mean, the stuff became declassified in the 80s. They've never made a movie about how they tried to put satellites inside of house cats and just killed cats in a van over the course of a summer. They've never made that movie starring Robert Pattinson. You know, like they're you know, they don't make.
And also,
it's more of a Paul Dano. Like,
yeah, that's a Dano role. To speak to like, and look at the changes. Like, oh no, we paid Geller to be for the script, and Geller was a shiesty guy anyways.
Yeah, we were cool.
Like, Richard Kind looks like he has been directed to play a Jew. Like, he looks like Affleck goes like, well, you're gonna like Jew it up here. Like, it seems really like, nasty like in Pacino the center of that the movie. Hunters.
Have you seen that show, The Hunters?
It's in, the Nazi Hunter show.
Yeah, yeah. He's, Al Pacino is playing almost offensively, like almost like a 90s SNL character.
Dude, Richard Kind cool is show, playing but... it. Richard Kind is playing that part, and that part's written like the nastiest, like stock character, like.
More like Richard anti-Semitic.
Yikes. I think a man who is Jewish, maybe. I don't know. But like,
that was just a joke. Jezebel.
You know, hey guys, I'm not speaking on any of that.
Jezebel, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
Kyle's Jewish. He can do this.
I'm Jewish and I'm a woman. Oh, it's fine.
And the other thing they remove is like, oh no, we thought of Jack Kirby. Like, we bought the script and then we brought on Jack Kirby. Like, Michael Parks plays Jack Kirby in like one scene in Argo.
Turns out I am Jack Kirby, said the CIA.
Now, here's where it kind of like, it's a weird little twist that kind of stops this thing cold. It might be considered that to date, we have to rely on Geller's account of most of this, of Lord of Light and Science Fiction Land, and for the timeline of when the drawings were actually completed. It could be speculated the art may have been done closer to the time of the Iran crisis, and that if, as the movie depicts, Kirby was actually hired by the CIA, or if by or by Geller acting as some sort of CIA proxy. It could have been because not only the quality of his imagination, but also his speed. Kirby oddly worded his statement in the promotional package that Geller assembled for the film, quote, I believe that this film and the way we are conceiving it could contribute to saving the world. So now that quote can be read as like, he's just as high on shit as Geller about, you know, all this Buddhist Christ space stuff, or, you know, who knows where Jack Kirby in the late 70s is, but it just seems like we're not positive. We really only have Geller who speaks up, because once this is declassified, Geller's the only one who wants to get in a new word of being like, none of this happened like this.
Wow. So Spike, you're telling me the line between doing drugs and being influenced by the CIA is nebulous.
Right there.
It's almost as if mental illness, drugs, and the CIA are constantly crossing paths with each other.
It's right there. I mean, it's just right there.
You know, it's just, hey folks,
it's crazy the weird throuple they're in.
Google Lake City quiet pills.
Now, in the years that followed,
I'm deep, oh, Barry, baby.
Barry went into security software development, producing early encryption software needed in the growing computer technology industry. But Lord of Light was never far from his mind, to the point where in the early 2010s, so basically as soon as he was aware of this and it kind of came back to him, he was ready to restart both. He frequented many comic conventions, lecturing on the history of Lord of Light, his work with Jack Kirby, and furthering his concepts with the original think tank of using futuristic technologies to change the consciousness of humanity. In 2012, Barry started working with Jack Kirby Museum trustee Tom Craft to digitally restore and enhance the science fiction land drawings into prints to bring more attention to Kirby and Royer's work. So basically, like, the second all this stuff became public, he just rushed to try to make all of the work public. Like, he had never been able to profit off of it. Not only profit off of it, but able to show off all of his collaborators' work. You know, he didn't get to... Kirby's the only one who fully did what he was brought on to do, because everyone else relied on the park being created. Whereas he was just like, oh, everything's back and I'm allowed to talk about this? Well, then you guys should see what Jack Kirby did and what we tried to do with this movie. That's why if you look at these things I posted, a lot of them...
make money off this podcast either. I'm not giving him a cent.
We can do ads. We could reach out to somebody. I don't know.
Doesn't mean I'm giving him money.
Jesus. All right, so he starts rebuilding his think tank with new videographers and digital designers. He was the subject of a documentary that was filming based on specifically the subject of science fiction land. But he passed away, unfortunately, this February, February of 2022. On a publication, one publication in a tribute after his passing wrote, Barry was an outrageous dreamer who existed outside time and space. We may never look upon his like again. Barry also had, I'll close with this. Unfortunately, we have to close. I mean, what ended up happening was, like, there was actually momentum. I do think that there was a way for this thing to have survived Schaefer leaving, especially as a film, but it certainly derailed. Now, I will leave you with this, is that the last thing I found was that Barry Ira Geller, you're muted.
RIP to a legend real quick. I mean, that's a
shame. RIP to a legend. And on that, I will say that the last thing I found as I was closing out of things is that Barry Ira Geller had a LinkedIn page with 16 followers, 15 connections, 5 interests, including Marvel and Lucasfilm, and one single line of employment history, reading Lord of Light, developer, July 1977 to present.
Wow. You know, sometimes you leave this world and all you have is some concept art and 15 connections on LinkedIn and the idea of a hand that makes you feel weightless.
That park would have been so rad.
What a fucking, right. Oh, can you imagine? I'm trying to get Dome in the weightless cube.
Also, that's the shit they would have had in 1979. Imagine the shit they would have now.
Well, you Google science fiction park and it looks like, China is building one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They've gotten the Lord of Light rights. China now has China's CIA has them. And they're like, we bought them from the CIA.
Inside China's new sci-fi theme park, boasting a Star Wars VR roller coaster and a giant transformer.
The tagline is, Godzilla's real. We made him. Take that.
They
Japan.
Would at this point be making Godzilla, right?
It's China just giving a thumbs up to Japan by making Godzilla real.
Amazing. I mean, if you do look it up, the first thing that will come up is there was a documentary being made about the $400 million 1,000-acre theme park. You know, the numbers vary, but
yeah,
they were making a documentary, and I don't know how much was filmed, especially of speaking to Geller, but hopefully some of this that Geller spoke to makes the light. You can find hours of this, like hundreds of hours of this dude on doing like Zoom interviews. This dude was all over, like talked to everybody during the pandemic about, like, you can find, obviously he has so much in his brain, but there's even more stuff out there that he just shared in like videos that have like 50 views. Like, this guy never gave up, and he technically worked on something that saved lives. To Kyle, what Kyle's saying is, like, one of the less nasty things a nasty organization has done comes from this dude fucking up, wanting to do something awesome and fucking up by picking the wrong collaborators. So, I mean, to speak to those people,
but just barely the wrong ones, like, not so, like, he was so close.
And the movie could have worked. I mean, the movie survives.
You never get a makeup guy who works for the CIA. First rule of showbiz, kid.
I might not have known. I think first rule of CIA might be, don't tell your business partners about it. But
I ask all my business partners.
with, we have, obviously Geller's work never came to a tangible fruition, but when we also consider these Americans in Iran, we got to ask, on what is probably about to be our shortest episode, I have to ask, was it worth it, guys? Was it worth these American lives? I think Kyle's muted again.
I guess, dude.
I guess. So how many American lives were saved versus how many were ruined through the embezzling and like the loss of money?
This is fair. I mean, and also you could consider our lives have been ruined because we've never been assigned lane 896. Imagine picking up your shoes.
The tram will be here in 12 minutes.
All right, so I believe it was, I mean, what is it? It's,
I mean, there's
six American diplomats were saved. Now, I'm going to run through six things this part could have had. You tell me if it's worth one life. Would you trade one American life for more than 2,000 hotel rooms?
That sounds like a Vegas commercial.
Would you trade one American life for 2,000 hotel rooms? Would you trade this American life?
MGM Grand.
I'm gonna think that's a yes. So we saved one person. Now, would you trade an American life for a 30-story structure that contains 1,000 bowling alley lanes? Wait, with robot workers?
Yes.
I was gonna say how many? Also, okay. 70s robot workers. That wasn't there yet. No. That super wasn't there yet.
Sounds lit.
So
it's an Amazon warehouse.
I think we're giving up one life. Okay, so I'm
giving up a life here.
All right, would you trade a life for streams where guests could fish for trout?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so
that's what they're fighting for.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay, you're right.
Why are we even arguing if I can't come back and trout? Mini chicken fry.
Are we saving a life in but we lose 10-story statues depicting characters from Lord of Light with restaurants inside?
We need those restaurants. You know how many jobs that creates?
This reminds me of that sketch from I Think You Should Leave where the guy is like riffing, the dude's playing the country song and he starts being like, and the bones are their money and the skeletons came to life and the statues are 10-story tall and you can go in them but not live there, only just to visit.
The thing is too, this thing, like the statues would have restaurants in them, but earlier I explained that.
In the man, only in his knees.
What's interesting is that, you know, they sold a lot of these wouldn't be like IP restaurants. It would be like a Pizza Hut.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. It's like TGI Fridays is in the guy's ankle.
Yeah, there's a fucking Chili's to go in the titty. You know, like, I love it.
It's like airport restaurants. It's like Taco Bell Express.
In his asshole.
And a big gate where they could dump out Baja Blast, like the beginning of Mad Max with the water.
And now we have two more lives at stake. Are we saving a person for an attraction where park goers can experience weightlessness inside a cube held by a hand?
We have to have the cube. People that need to die for the cube. It is all justified.
Right. Yeah. Put the rest of those fingers down, Spike.
You could nuke half of the country, and if it was replaced by a cube where you could simulate weightlessness
in a hand.
Simulate homelessness in a cube.
That is actually science. That's the real future.
Just get the box.
All right, and then finally,
I'm going to take away all your money and put you in this box.
Simulate.
Are we safe? That's how they raise money for the park. They steal what homeless people have. And finally, is this American living, or are we going to get park employees with jetpacks?
I mean, if the I gotta just see day three of the jetpacks.
Yeah.
Because day one's mayhem. Day two, they're like, maybe we got this. Day three, they're losing all hope. You know, day two, there's like an added, like people have slept on it. They're like, okay, I think I've really could control it this time.
You want my answer, Spike?
Yeah.
I want to. I'm sorry, but there's just going to be another crying woman holding a triangle folded flag.
Yeah, because these boys are jetpacks.
Because these boys are on jetpacks.
Statistically speak, based on this voting scale.
The guy who drops off the triangle folded flag jetpacks off of the porch.
Into the ceiling.
Yeah, into the roof and dies. And then someone comes
lands
up with
in
another.
The stream.
A guy comes
and someone
up with
fishing
another.
For trout catches him.
They're doing the 21 gun salute for him, and the guy gets shot trying to boost out.
Oh, no, don't do the 21 gun salute right now. The troops are all coming home on jetpacks.
It'd be so loud. Dude, think about how loud Adventure Dome is with no jetpacks.
Yeah, everybody's running around on little chainsaw backpacks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also in 1970, how it
would work. Yeah. I mean, that's a pre Boba Fett. Like, jetpacks are like, in their mind, they'd be putting these people on like tiny little backpacks with a rocket.
Yeah.
So based on this metric, this movie was half worth it. We've saved three lives and we're getting our bowling alley.
It's pretty good. Pretty worth it. Half worth it's yes. Pretty good.
So solid. Again, like Kyle said,
nacho places you think the bowling alley has for 1,000 lives.
Let me tell you, there's bowling alley food.
1,000 lanes, 30 stories.
Yeah.
I'm going to say.
Gotta have at least.
You think 15. There's more than one a story?
You have at least 15. You gotta have at least one every other story. Right?
But that sucks. You know, it's like literally like to what you're saying. It's like 100 things, 100. You know,
you're walking 15 lanes to go.
Well, I bet the pitch is that you would have like a little console, and if there's robot workers, you would just order food the little console, and they would bring the food to you.
I went to a sushi restaurant that had a robot bring me drinks, and I didn't like it at all.
Why didn't the robots? Why ain't the robots on jetpacks?
Well, that sounds because
then it can't decide whether
fuck
can't decide whether it's gonna whether it's gonna save Will Smith or a child. That's why
this shit looks like a sewing machine hooked to a rocket. It's just barreling down at you with hot Cheetos, like hot nachos. Oh man! I wish it could have opened just so we could see how many people would have died in the first like month.
Oh my god! Yeah. That's a fair point, too, is that this thing failed and it saved lives. Had it succeeded, we would have seen a lot of people die.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know that.
Yeah, maybe the best thing this
Kyle raises
did
a
was
brilliant point. Kyle
we
raises
don't know
a genius
that.
Point I had not considered, which is the exhaust alone kills everyone.
That's why it would be a pulley system, and they would just look like jetpacks. That'd be the point. It's about the theater of it.
But then you have all these people who come back to the park angry with guns because they didn't get to see people on real jetpacks.
No, you wouldn't.
Pulleys. It absolutely would. I would.
No.
If you told me I was going to Legoland and I show up and there's no goddamn Legos, okay, it's becoming AR-15 land.
Well, Kyle, you didn't go to jetpack land. You went to science fiction land and you saw science fiction. Holster the gun.
Said that.
No what?
Do you want to have said that?
I stand on the record that if they get rid of all the Legos from Legoland, I'll kill everyone left there. That's the point, Spike.
It's fair.
Guys, it's
I'm just
a
saying,
joke. Jezebel, no. Calm down.
Oh, I forgot my... I had a fucking opening joke. I blew the joke. Whatever. I'll try it next time.
Oh, man. That was a great great research, though, buddy. That was such a crazy episode.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. And thanks, you know, again, look up. There's so much more Jack Kirby art. Everybody go look up Jack Kirby Argo art, Jack Kirby Lord of Light art. You can find some really cool stuff. It's all very like blacklight postery.
Yeah. Well, these would all make
but,
cool like, posters.
I think there are figures and posters now. That was also part of Geller trying to raise funds and like get
figures?
The Kirby archives. Ooh, yeah.
I might have to get a Lord of Light action figure, 3D print. An aspect.
And so, yeah. So that's...
Earthen.
that, I wanted to, before we toss off to what is next, I do want to highlight, because we haven't gotten, we don't get these often, but I want to shout out Jillian Diamond, who is a listener who recommended a movie to us that I don't think any of us had heard about, which it's called Delgo, which I'm sure we're going to cover one day. It looks like our perfect kind of like mutilated animation.
You sent this in the group chat and I looked into it a little bit. Delgo is crazy. We definitely got,
I saw like the faces of the characters and I'm like, oh, we're doing this, whatever happened.
I watched the trailer and it's wild because it looks like it's the saddest part is like with like Food Fight, you can tell no money was spent, right? Mm-hmm. The sad part about Delgo is you're like, no, people that knew what they were doing worked on this. That's sad. Oh. That's the saddest part.
I think she also said they were trying to be the new Shrek, which is like, what a weird Star Wars replacement. Yeah.
Don't try to come at Star Wars. Come at the Ogre.
Come at Shrek.
No, that's awesome. And if you guys have any other suggestions for stuff, please send it because we love that for sure. But yeah, we got to definitely cover Delgo for you. Thanks for listening.
But we're not doing Delgo next week. No. Kyle, what are we doing next week?
Next week, we are doing something. We're diving back into video games.
Great.
And we're covering probably our wildest character to date, maybe on the podcast.
Wow. Well, who? I guess we'll go into this next week, but we'll start covering
the titular Bob Poloni, the creator of Bob's Game.
Bob's Game. Bob's Game. Had I heard of this, and I've never heard of this. It'll be interesting.
If you do want to play Bob's Game, you're out of luck. As of 2 days ago, he updated it on Steam to just be called OK, and the picture is just a little picture of his face. So you can't play Bob's Game anymore. You can email me. I have a DS ROM hack version of one of the first demos, but that's about all you got anymore. So you can watch a playthrough. So people have done like Let's Plays of it before. But yeah, Bob's Game gone, but we're gonna cover it.
So yeah, all right. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you to Tizzy Mav for the music, or whatever your name is now, for the music with our names in it.
Yeah, Tizzy Mav seemingly is not a name anyone on the internet uses anymore. So wherever you are, sir,
please reach out.
You silent hero of this podcast.
And also follow us on Instagram at DevHellPodcast. And wherever you are listening to podcasts, throw us a like, throw us 5 stars, throw us some love because we love you back. And we'd love to see the support because we know you guys are out there and we want to hear from you.
We literally only have a few reviews and some of them are 2 and like 1 star. So if you could give us a 5-star review, I know every fucking podcast asks for these, but we actually kind of need them because our
average feel really is like nasty.
4 stars.
We all feel really nasty asking for this, but we fucked up and didn't ask for it at all for like 2 years.
If you do give us like, if we get 10, we will honestly never bring it up again.
We'll shut the fuck up.
We'll never talk about it again.
It would be cool if you guys did it, but it's like,
and you can, you know, like I said, you can write a scene from a movie. We'll do a dramatic retelling of it.
You guys know the game with podcasts and shit. That's how we have to do it for support and stuff.
Tag a movie podcast that you want us to start beef with, and we'll like look into it. We'll dox the people.
Trust me, I'm known as a good internet bully. So if you want,
we will cyber bully the fuck out of any podcast you sort of send our way.
Yeah, and check out wherever their mom is or whatever.
Yeah, that's for Spike.
That part. Yeah, I don't know. Spike's, it sounds like a thing I'd like to do.
Banging their moms.
Yeah. All right. So,
bye, demons.
I think we fucked that up.
I think I could convince their dads to do gay porn.
I love this one.